on in less than 1 minute.
Life, you give me. Give my creation. Life.
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go.
Right now.
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. Six. Five. Four. Three. Two. One.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show. Pleasure to have you along with us this afternoon. We hope to provide you with an informative, entertaining program today. And, of course, you can join us. 866-546-5254 on our nickel if you like, and if you've got some minutes to spare, you can call 866-546-5254 or 941-876-6896. Beautiful day here in Southwest Florida. Hope it's nice where you are as well. We're still in the 90s every day and still a little bit humid every day, but at least we don't have any storms brewing out and about now in the Atlantic Ocean. Say, I have done a little research the last couple of days, and it appears to me that the hurricane damage over in the Houston area was, by all appearances that I've seen, a lot worse than what we're seeing on the Internet and on TV with the media. Have any of you seen that as well? There's been a blackout of some news. There's been no-fly zones put over a couple of places that they're trying to just trying to keep the press away from. And I don't know that I've noticed that before. You think there's something going on? They don't want people to see the actual damage because maybe FEMA is not quite keeping up like they ought to? Is there something political about this? I hope not. I do hope not. But anyway, that's seems kind of odd to me. And, of course, we're going to talk a lot today about the financial meltdown taking place on Wall Street. A little later on, we're going to have Representative Peter Welch from Vermont to talk about the House drilling bill that took place last night. We'll have some questions for him regarding that. And I think around 3:45 he's supposed to call, but you know how that is with politicians. It doesn't always work out the way that we'd like it to. Especially on live radio. I spent considerable time today, and I don't know how many of you have done this, spent considerable time working over an electoral map. And we know which states are solid red, and we know which states are solid blue. And there are quite a few states that still could go either way. And amongst the ones that still could go either way, are Nevada and Colorado and maybe New Mexico and Minnesota and Wisconsin and Michigan and Indiana, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Virginia, Missouri, Florida, and New Hampshire. Well, some of those are decidedly leaning one way or then another, but there are states that are still declared not ready to be put in solidly in a red or a blue column. So I started looking over this thing today and looking at the ones that are leaning, and leaning blue anyway. We've got Minnesota, and we've got Wisconsin, and we've got Michigan and Pennsylvania, and New Hampshire, and New Mexico, and Washington, the state of Washington. And then in the red column, of course, we're going to put Florida in there, Virginia, Indiana, Ohio, Missouri. And that comes down to Nevada and Colorado. And what it boils down to is if all the states that I said turn out blue for Obama, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Vermont, and New Mexico, and Washington, if it comes down to that, that would leave, if I've got this figured right, it could come out a tie. If, for example, Obama took Nevada and McCain took Colorado, it could come out to a 269 each tie. That's right. Imagine that nightmare. And that could easily happen. This could all boil down to the state of Colorado. This is something that's a state that's maybe been ignored a little bit in all of this. But Colorado and Nevada are going to become extremely important in this. It might come down to either one of those states winning it. And like I said, as I see this electoral map at the moment, if it does come down to those two, and Colorado would go for McCain and Nevada for Obama, I think we end up with a 269 tie. And I don't know how many of you remember your civics lessons of when you were a kid. Remember those days they were teaching you this and you were sitting there going, oh, geez, when would I ever, who would ever care about this? Well, turns out some of us really do care about it. But do you know what happens if it comes out electoral tie, and it could easily happen this year? I mean, the odds aren't great that it'll happen, but it could easily happen. If it ends up 269-269, then it goes to the House of Representatives. And you might say, well, that's a good deal. We would automatically win if it goes to the House of Representatives. Well, not so fast. It doesn't go to the House of Representatives the way you think it might. They don't all sit down and vote and come up with, 435 votes. That's not how it works in the House of Representatives. What happens is each state's congressional delegation get together, the Republicans and the Democrats. And let's take Ohio, for example. Ohio has 18 congressional representatives. And so they sit down and they vote. And I honestly don't know the breakdown of Ohio representatives right at the moment, but there are 18 of them. Let's just say for conversation's sake that 10 of them are Republicans and 8 of them are Democrats. If they sit in their delegation and they vote, and it comes out 10 for the Republicans, for McCain, and 8 for Obama, then Ohio would count as one vote for McCain. Each state gets one vote. Now, if they voted and it came out 9 Republicans for McCain and 9 Democrats for Obama, Ohio would get 0 vote. Their vote would not count in case of a tie. So you can easily see that looking around the country in the different states with their delegation, they'd take Alaska, for example. They've only got one congressional representative. And I'm assuming Don Young would vote for McCain, so they would automatically get the state of Alaska. And there could be some interesting, I didn't have time to go through and break down all the delegations, just how they stack up, Republican or Democrat, but you could end up with a really interesting vote. You could end up with only maybe 40 votes. I don't know how many states would come out a tie. If 10 of them did, there'd be only 40 votes. So this thing could get very, very, very interesting, beside the fact that we still probably will have some shenanigans in some of the states. There is little question that there will be in Florida. Yes, I live in Florida. Do I have confidence in the electoral process here in Florida? No, certainly I do not. Do I have confidence in Ohio? No, I do not. There are other states that have problems as well. Just recently here in Florida, in the Miami area, 3,500 votes were lost and swung a primary election from one side to the other. So These things are still happening, could happen. They may be accidental. They may be happening on purpose, which I think is more likely the case. And we could have an election once again that we would not know for many days who is the winner. And moreover, I do want to mention that if this goes to the House of Representatives, if it ended up an Electoral College tie and it went to the House of Representatives, there's another aspect to that that I didn't mention. It goes to the new House of Representatives. In other words, if 20 seats change hands, if there are different people in them, the guys in the present Congress do not vote in that delegation. It's the newly elected people that vote in it. So that could throw it off too, especially due to the fact that Democrats are expected to pick up some more seats this year. So this could get very, very involved. It could get very lengthy. I hope it's not lengthy. I hope we know the next day who the next president's going to be. Don't think I could take another one of those 2000 elections. That was just a little too wild for me. Spent days in mourning over that when it was over with. How many days did it go on? I can't remember how many days it actually went on, but it went on for far too long. And it gave the thieves a chance to steal the office, which they did. And I think by now we all know that through their lies and intimidation and so forth. I think we know that's how it went. But take a look at some of these electoral maps. There's a great site that I would recommend to you, 270towin.com. So it's that simple, yes, 270towin.com. And you can find out anything you ever wanted to know about the Electoral College, or not the Electoral College, but electoral map, necessarily. Right now, with the states that are solid red and solid blue, it's 186 for Obama and 178 for Republicans. But like I said, Florida, Virginia, Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, Ohio. You know, some of those states definitely. Now, Ohio's leaning red. Florida's definitely leaning red. Indiana's leaning red considerably, I think. Missouri's leaning red. And Nevada and Colorado, who knows about those. Washington's leaning blue, New Mexico's leaning blue, along with Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, and New Hampshire. So this could get really, really sticky, folks. And check it out, 270towin.com. It's a great website. They've done such a great job with that. I'd love it. And you can go on there and even play around with it a little bit, which states that you think are going to swing one way or another, and it'll change the tally for you and all that. It's a radio host dream, really. Had a propensity to sneeze here lately. Don't know what's going on with that. Also, was sent a really fun, let me see if I can find it here. A little fun thing where you can go check out your views with what is happening, you know, figure out where you should be voting-wise. You can answer a bunch of questions, and it'll tell you which one of these candidates that you side with the most. And it is abcnews.gov.com/politics/match-o-matic. And you might just Google that, politics match-o-matic. And it's a lot of fun. You go through and answer about 15 questions. And we found that to be fun and interesting, and I think you will as well. Of course, I think you probably know before you even start the thing which side you're going to be on. If your views are solid and deep-rooted, if you answer the questions with honesty, you're going to end up on one side or the other. So it's probably not going to be close. I didn't want to talk a lot today about John McCain and this financial meltdown. Really, as anticipated, And as we've anticipated for a long time, and I don't like to be the purveyor of doom and gloom, but the global financial system is, if anybody wants to admit it and say it openly and not cause a panic in the country, even in the world, the system, the global financial system, is really now in a free fall. And the bankruptcy of Lehman and the government takeover of Fannie and Freddie, which is essentially a government takeover of the entire U.S. mortgage market, the genuine fire sale we're seeing take place right now, Merrill Lynch by Barclays, and the expansion of the Federal Reserve emergency lending into securities, which really, really codifies, I guess, its position as the only source of capital for big financial firms. The looming failure of AIG, and it's yet to be known whether they'll pull out of this or not, as the world's biggest insurance company, and the impending failure that everybody's talking about on Wall Street for how long now, Washington Mutual, which will that'll deplete the entire FDIC fund in one whack. All of those things point to some tougher times ahead. Do you see anything positive by those things happening? I do not. I wish I did, but I don't. And we've seen some of them coming for a while now. We didn't know about AIG on the horizon. I don't think many of us laymen that don't work on Wall Street, I hadn't heard anything about it for quite a while until rumors started to float last week. And I don't think a lot of people thought that Lehman or Lynch was in this trouble that they were in, and all of a sudden, bam, they're gone. And like I mentioned, they have been talking about Washington Mutual for quite some time now, and everybody's been expecting them to fall. They had IndyMac go down, and it's an interesting situation, and it's really a financially terrifying situation. And while to many people this developing situation will be uncharted territory, for those of us who've already recognized the trend lines, there's kind of a roadmap for the next decade that in my mind is becoming increasingly clear, that there's going to be an acceleration in the decline of the state. There's going to be widespread economic dislocation, and there's going to be privatization of just about everything. I think we can see that coming if these current trends continue. So far, the Fed has pumped in almost $900 billion of bailout money so far. That runs around $12,000 per household in this country. Did you get that number? $12,000 per household in this country. $900 billion the people down at the U.S. Mint have been working overtime day and night to print the extra money. And a lot of this is money that's backed up and we're borrowing from China. And the problem with all of this is, I know you do as well, I know a number of small businessmen and women, quite a few as a matter of fact, and nearly every week, almost every week lately, one of them has had to close up shop because of the slow economy. And they've had to liquidate and look for work, go out and look for jobs that just aren't there. And who's coming to their aid? And I think you know the answer to that. Nobody's coming to their aid. No one except the eventual vultures who descend upon them to buy their inventories at pennies on the dollar. But Wall Street, that's another story altogether. Not to worry. Uncle Sam will give you our money to keep going because you are, in their words, too big to fail. Ben Bernanke has said that. Alan Greenspan has said that. Too big to fail. What does that mean exactly? It means that no matter how big you get, no matter how greedy you get, no matter how intertwined you get with the economy of the rest of the world, and even though your company is financed by stockholders own your company, that no matter what happens, you're going to be okay. because Uncle Sam, all of us, will bail you out? Really, that's an ugly situation. And in many ways, it's just not right. You know it, and I know it. But then you get to the point where you think, well, why should you and I care about problems at AIG if we're not customers? Well, one of the reasons is because AIG is by far the world's largest insurer, and its stock is found in a lot of, and this is the kicker, its stock is found in a lot of mutual funds, including any S&P 500 index fund. And so, working Joe, a lot of his pensions are socked into these mutual funds. A lot of people bought into mutual funds and put away a few bucks a year, a few bucks a month every year during their working years. And those funds will be going down the drain. And it's also been a component for the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Think about this. It's been calculated that all by itself, that AIG's been responsible for dragging the Dow Jones down more than 400 points so far this year. Too big to fail. And you must sit by. There are many of us who are, I've didn't major in economics, but I know enough about it to have a decent grasp of all this. We think that the Alan Greenspans of the world and the Ben Bernankes and these people have a great handle on this, and that their brains are so big that they won't go out and make major mistakes, and we can be confident in their abilities to run these things. Well, au contraire, not necessarily true. Stop and think about the situation with AIG. Just 4 or 5 days ago, we've now sunk $85 billion of our money, yours and mine, into AIG because their stock was driven down so far. The feds could have saved us $40 billion. $40 billion. Think about that. If they'd gone to AIG's rescue just 3 or 4 days ago. And the reason that they needed to go maybe 4 days ago and do this, if they were going to do it, think what this cost. If it was inevitable that they were going to do this, the time to have done it was 4 days ago. Do these people not realize what the short sellers on Wall Street have been up to with this AIG stock and others? The short sellers took huge advantage of the situation, and they drove the stock price down by almost half in 4 days. 4 days. We could have saved $40 billion in 4 days. But no, the people that we trust as experts to do this, they put off a decision on what to do, and it ends up costing us twice as much. Now, they say, well, don't you worry. We're backed up by having 79.9% of the assets of AIG as collateral. Are the assets of AIG worth 79.9% of, you know, is $85 billion, is it worth it? But these short sellers, and I'm shocked that leaders on Wall Street didn't see this, or maybe they didn't want to see it because the short sellers have been killing us all with oil prices and stock prices. The shorts, especially those that are involved in what they call naked short selling, which is illegal. And now I see finally they're going to do, the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, finally going to do something. Something to halt some of the short selling. And because with short selling, they're able to go out and just drive the market down to almost any place they want to. People see a bunch of selling going on, and they think, oh, my God, and there's a run, and they've artificially driven the price down, and especially these people involved in the naked selling where they don't even actually ever borrow the stock in the manner in which they should. You've usually got 3 days to claim, and I don't want to get too technical about it. But why didn't Bernanke see that? I don't understand why he didn't see that. I don't understand why the powers that be on Wall Street didn't see this. I guess these days, in these days of massive bailouts, the $40 billion extra that we lost over 4 days, just chump change. And that brought me back to a time, I can't remember the year, and I didn't have time to look it up today, but is anyone listening old enough to remember when the government bailed out Chrysler and there was just a hue and cry came up from everybody's, oh my God, we can't be bailing out Chrysler. It was either, I think it was $2 billion. I think that's what it was. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was $2 billion. And that was looked upon as a massive gamble by the government. And a lot of people complained about it. But thank God there was a brilliant man by the name of Lee Iacocca, who was the CEO of Chrysler. A man that I often wished would have run for president. I thought he was that brilliant. I still think so. But he pulled this off, and they paid back every penny to the United States government, made a big PR thing out of it when they finished paying them, and we got it all back. The old K car saved Chrysler at the time, and I'm not saying it was a great car, but it sure saved Chrysler. But then Lee Iacocca was a real man who cared about the company and the jobs. Here's a man that really cared about the company and the jobs. Here's a man who could have padded his pockets like no other at the time. But he did not. Because he cared about the jobs, he cared about Chrysler more than he cared about his bank account. And as I recall, he went for a year or two and didn't even take a salary. I could be wrong in that, but I think that's it. And so do remember that these short sellers, they've got to put a stop to it. The SEC is now saying that they're investigating this. I hope so. But that just in 4 days, four short days, it doubled the cost of this problem due to inattention or due to ignorance. I don't know. This whole thing hasn't been transparent enough so the public can keep an eye on what's going on, so that even the Congress could keep an eye on what's going on. I think it'd be fitting to maybe to apply a little logic to this whole AIG, Lehman, Lynch, Fannie, Freddie Mae mess, wouldn't it? Think about this. The Republicans wanted to deregulate the banks and the financial institutions, and they pulled it off. Started way back during Ronald Reagan administration. That's one thing they wanted to do, is take away every last bit of regulation that we had in this country. Get everything private and get the government off our backs. Remember that, Ronald Reagan, that the government's the problem. Government's not the solution, it's the problem. And he infected this country with the attitude that government was bad, that was necessarily bad. And I'm not saying there hasn't been some bad government, because there has, and if you don't believe that, just take a good look at the last 8 years. There's been plenty of bad government, by some Democrats as well. I've often felt that in the days of Lyndon Johnson, there were some excesses by the Democratic administration. So I'm not pointing the finger at one side or the other. But these neocons, and it started with Reagan, and they just started cutting regulation out of the government, and human beings, being what they are going to go for it every time. They're going to take the low road. They're going to do whatever they can to rob, rape, and pillage the rest of us. That's just the way it is. That's a sad fact about humanity, but that's the way it is. There have to be laws. There has to be regulations. And, you know, it's the same thing you could say it in private, that we could have a community, let's say, of 10,000 of us here. We could have a city, and we don't need any laws. We'll just trust that we'll all regulate ourselves, and we'll all have the moral turpitude to go ahead and do what it is we need to do, and live moral, upstanding lives, and all be fair to one another, and always do the right thing. So in our little new community, our new little city here of 10,000 that we're talking about, our make-believe city, we don't need any laws. We'll all stop at the stop signs. There won't be any crime, so we don't need any cops. We'll just all do the right thing. Now, do you think there's a chance in hell that that's ever going to happen? Of course not. And it's the same way with Wall Street. Unregulated, they're going to go for it every single time. What would make anybody think that everybody on Wall Street is honest enough not to rob and steal every dime they can get their hands on? Most assuredly, there are some people on Wall Street who are honest and do the right thing. Most assuredly, there are many who do not. But let's do put a little logic in this whole thing. The Republicans did want to deregulate the banks and the financial institutions, and they did pull it off. And the banks were then free to do almost anything they wanted. And the oversights they did have were not being properly maintained. They gorged themselves with subprime mortgages and crazy loans and loans that weren't backed up with enough collateral. And now the feds are nationalizing them. And it seems to me that is what the Republicans have always accused the Democrats of doing, but now the Republicans are doing it. They're nationalizing Wall Street. And when you sit down and think about this, does any of this make any sense to you? Other than protecting the fat cats from losing semi-truckloads of money, does this make any sense? And perhaps the most remarkable part of all of this is we've got half of the people of voting age in the United States that apparently have a bad case of amnesia. Amnesia's got several causes. A lot of them are traceable to brain injury related to some sort of physical trauma or disease or infection or drug or alcohol abuse or reduced blood flow to the brain. Damage to the memory centers of the brain. Using too much booze, too many drugs. Your brain tissues get damaged. Amnesia. And it seems to me There are approximately 50-some-odd million voters in this country of voting age right now who have amnesia. Do any of them remember the last 8 years? Do they remember the great economy during the Clinton years? Do they remember Ronald Reagan's contempt for proper and necessary governmental controls? Do they remember that? Do they remember what has happened every single time in our nation's history? As long as there's been a Republican Party, every time the Republicans have controlled all three houses of government? I am astonished that there are so many people who have amnesia who are so stubborn, unwilling to look at the truth. I'm fascinated by that. I really am. I think you should be as well. We're going to pause for a break. We will come back in just a minute or two.
Something always brings me back. chains. Never wanted anything so much than to drown in your love and not feel your rain.
I really do. Very, very nice. 866-546-5254. We're expecting Congressman Pete Welch from Vermont to be calling us pretty soon. We want to talk about the House passing the drilling bill last night and how he feels about that. Like to hear your opinion on it as well. I have so much I do want to get started on today about the election coming up and all of that. And we have much more to talk about, as a matter of fact, about Wall Street. What a wild ride it has been on Wall Street today. Started out, it was up this morning, and then down and up and down and all over the place, and then it was 300 points down, and then it was... back down to, an hour or so ago, is back down to about 140 points or down. And now it's on the way down again. It's 339 down right now. Oil is up $6 a barrel in one day. So it's a wild ride. I don't know if I had a pile of money if I'd have it on Wall Street. I frankly don't have to worry about it myself, except for the overall ramifications on the economy, and it's not good. And it is a shame that these, and I'll agree with John McCain on one thing. I will agree with him on one thing. He said Wall Street is nothing but a bunch of casinos, and I will absolutely, positively agree with him on that. When you think about what, yes, I know money drives the world, but when you stop and think about what Wall Street is actually about, it's about going down and placing bets every day. That's what it is. Oh, boy. I see the Palin-McCain campaign has been out working separately today. They're getting back together tonight again. Aren't they a lovely couple? The Palin-McCain campaign. Aren't they sweet? We all this talk, and we'll talk a little bit more about it later on today, but all this talk about Sarah Palin's record, she fits right in with those incompetent executives that have a lot of executive experience. That Carla Fiorina, whatever her name is, yesterday, she just certainly stuck her foot in it, didn't she? Oh, my God. Especially when she said, well, neither McCain, Obama, Biden, nor anybody can run a corporation. Oh, I hear Johnny Boy wasn't too crazy about hearing that. But she does fit in with those incompetent executives. And so maybe somebody should start questioning, not whether or not Palin has more executiveness, but whether she was any good as an executive. I think that's the question. There are a lot of people that say they were executives, but were they a good executive? But then again, that might be something they don't want to be asked. And to me, from what I've seen, there's a lot of evidence that to show that she would not want that asked. And we have John McCain. This worries me so much, this Palin-McCain ticket. It really does. I live in this country. You live in this country. We've got to depend upon having good leaders. We've not had good leaders as of late. For the last 8 years, the country has run amok. And we all know that. And we all know that we desperately need some leadership right now. We desperately need somebody sitting in the Oval Office that's got a lot of moxie and got a lot of good judgment and is honest and upright and forthright with the people in this country. And we need somebody there that's damn good and intelligent. Wouldn't that be a change from the last 8 years? And it looks like McCain doesn't know diddly squat. Did you hear him interviewed yesterday about his committee? They were talking about the economy, and he says that the oversight of the banks and, he doesn't even know what his own committee. He says he's been working on this all this time on the Commerce Committee. John Boy, I got news for you. I got big news for you, John Boy. The Commerce Committee doesn't have oversight over credit or financial service and housing, okay? These are the areas that are in crisis right now. Your committee did not have any oversight over these people, so why the hell would you think that you did? Don't you remember what you talked about in the Commerce Committee over the past 8 years, 6 years, I guess it is? It's the Senate Banking Committee that has the oversight of the banks and the banking and the financial institution and controls the prices of commodities and rents and services and the federal monetary policy, including the Federal Reserve System. And financial aid to commerce, John, and industry, and money, and credit, including the currency and the coinage. But the Commerce Committee oversees 13 areas, beginning with the Coast Guard, and continuing through regulation of consumer products and services, except for credit, financial services, and housing, and these are the very things that we're in trouble in right now. So McCain was the chairman of the Commerce Committee for 6 years, and he still doesn't know what the oversight of that committee, by that committee, is? Man, I'll tell you, maybe he needs to take Joe Lieberman with him. I mean, he's had him with him all the time. Wasn't Joe there? I didn't see the actual video of this. All I got to see was the transcript. Wasn't Joe Lieberman there to whisper in his ear, John, your committee didn't have anything to do with credit and financial services. That's the Senate Banking Committee. Oh, yeah. No, doesn't this cause you pause? Doesn't this make you wonder if this man is competent? Sufficiently competent to run the presidency of the United States? I think the answer is abundantly clear. You know, and we've had other embarrassments yesterday. I mean, he showed that he doesn't understand, and he can come back and try and rehash it all he wants to. He does not understand the meaning of the terms fundamentals of the economy. He tried to come out that with that deal yesterday and say, oh, I meant the people, I meant the workers, I meant the entrepreneurial spirit and all that. No, he didn't. Because they've gone back over the videos now, and they found that at least 22 times he made that very same statement. 22 times. And just in August, he was on the that crazy right-winger show, what's her name, Laura Ingraham show, and said, I still believe the fundamentals of our economy is strong, and he defined what the term fundamentals meant to him on that show. And he said, we're still the most innovative, the most productive, and the greatest exporter, the greatest importer. But on Monday, he defined the economy's fundamentals as workers and small businesses. Sorry, John, your secondary explanation of that just doesn't fly. And McCain comes back and says, well, one definition responded, one provided this definition, a very broad term, which includes such economic measures as interest rates, the government budget deficit, and the country's balance of trade, blah, 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 blah. And then he comes back and says, well, by this definition, things aren't so good. And then you get this statement that I have to admit, I certainly scratched my head yesterday when I heard him say it. McCain's calling for a high-level commission to study the current economic crisis. Republican presidential candidate John McCain on Tuesday called for a high-level commission to study the current economic crisis and claimed that a corrupt and excessive Wall Street had betrayed American workers. And he appeared Tuesday on the three morning network shows. McCain said that there was indeed a financial crisis, and that to understand what had caused it, the nation would need a review on the order of the one led by the September 11th Commission. And get this, here's the puzzling part of this. McCain said, I warned 2 years ago that this situation was deteriorating and unacceptable, he said on Good Morning America on ABC, and that the good old boy network and the corruption in Washington is directly involved, and one of the causes of this financial crisis that we're in today, and I know how to fix it, I know how to get things done. Well, he says he knows why this whole thing happened, so he wants a commission to help him figure out why this happened. He said he saw this coming 2 years ago, and he knows how to fix it. And that's so that's why he didn't lift a finger to do a damn thing over the last 2 years to try and prevent it or fix it. I haven't heard him speaking out about AIG or Lehman or Merrill Lynch. Have you? I haven't heard him warning about IndyMac or Washington Mutual. Have you? Of course not. I hadn't heard him speaking out on the campaign trail about Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. Have you? No. And now here he is calling for a special commission to look into something that he says he understands perfectly and that he knows how to fix it and he knows how to get things done. I would maintain that John McCain knows exactly almost nothing about the economy, just like he admitted a few months back. I don't know much about the economy, he said, and he has proven it in spades. I don't know. Boy, and I am sticking my neck out by saying this. I know I am. And some of you may not agree with me. But I think that at least having been a loser in the business world, in the oil business and other things, at least having been a loser, George Bush did pick up some business experience and did know something about the economy. First president to have an MBA or whatever. Well, just reading Business 101 would have got you more up to date on the economy than apparently John McCain is at the moment. But don't worry, not to worry, he's had Phil Graham there to back him up all along, right? Phil Graham, who says there is no recession, that the we Americans are nothing but a bunch of whiners. That is the type of judgment that John McCain has about the economy. Those are the kinds of people that he surrounds himself with. And people like this Steve Schmidt, which we'll talk a lot about later in the second hour of the program today. But I go back to this amnesia once again. How can it be that you look over the last 8 years, John McCain was in the Senate of the United States. He claims to have done so much for this country over the past 20-some-odd years in the Congress of the United States. Has he been railing against the Wall Street establishment? The answer is no, hell no, he has not. But now he's a crusader all of a sudden. Now he wants to go on a holy crusade against Wall Street. Well, ain't that just ducky? The genie's out of the box. They're out of the bottle now, John. Humpty Dumpty has fallen off the wall, and all the king's horses and all the king's men apparently aren't able to put it back together again. I am utterly fascinated what I'm going to hear from this man every single day. I really am. Say what you will about Barack Obama if you're on the other side of the political spectrum. You can't find him making any ignorant statements like this. You can't. I mean, listen to McCain just yesterday. Yesterday. Here we go. He made this statement yesterday.
What should the government do? First of all, do we even have that kind of money in the system?
The government should not. The government, of course, this is one of the outstanding and glaring examples of the terrible problems and corruption and greed and excess that has caused all of this fallout, which is going to harm the average American worker. No, I do not believe that the American taxpayer should be on the hook for AIG, and I'm glad that the Secretary Paulson is apparently taking the same line.
So if we get
and so that's yesterday. Yesterday he said that, and today he says, well, you know, I guess we kind of had to do it, and I'm so sorry we had to do that, but there's a pinch of... How could you be that definitive on one day and come back the next and say, well, you know, this isn't some guy working in one of the back offices with no windows. This isn't some clerk job he's running for. He's running for the presidency of the United States, for God's sake. And to day after day come up with statements like that. That's a bit disconcerting to me. I don't know about you. But then again, wanted to play you. Here's your average Republican recorded at the Republican National Convention. This is your average Republican right here, folks. I'm always talking about the average Republican. Well, here he is.
I'm John Hamilton on the floor of the Republican National Convention. All week long, we're bringing you special programming as we examine what change looks like in the 2008 election. Well, earlier I spoke with a delegate from Colorado. He had a vision for change in U.S. foreign policy, and it was certainly a hawkish one. It's the 2008 election. What is your vision for change under a John McCain administration?
Less taxes and more war.
Less taxes and more war.
More war.
So where should the United States bomb next?
Iran, baby.
Why? Why should we bomb Iran?
Protect Israel.
So you think Iran is threatening Israel right now, and the U.S. should intervene on behalf of Israel?
Absolutely. Or Israel do it themselves.
So what would that look like? What would a war on Iran look like?
Hopefully just bomb the hell out of them from the sky. No troops.
Are you worried about the escalating costs of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars? I mean, how would we pay for a war in Iran?
We should plant a flag, take the oil, take the money. We deserve reimbursement.
Okay. So you're commander-in-chief. Talk to me about how it works. I mean, do you invade? Are there troops on the ground? Are you just bombing overhead?
Just do strategical airstrikes. Take out their nuclear facility. Simple.
So, in particular, though, what is Iran doing to threaten Israel? Talk about that relationship.
Building nuclear weapons threatens the world.
Israel has nuclear weapons.
They don't threaten the world.
All right, so if Ahmadinejad were here today, what would you say to him?
Destroy your nukes.
All right, all right. So should the United States use nuclear weapons when it attacks Iran?
We could use slingshots and beat them, I'm sure.
Do you have a message for the people outside who are protesting the Republicans?
Get a job. You can protest, but don't get arrested, man.
Okay, so John McCain said we might be in Iraq for another 100 years. You support that?
We're still in Japan. We're still in Germany. We've been there over 60 years.
Thank you for watching this Link TV special, What Change Looks Like. See the full schedule at linktv.org/change.
Link TV. this guy, he was now, this wasn't some hanger-on guy. This wasn't some klutz at the Republican convention. This guy was a delegate down on the floor. Okay? A delegate. And I submit to you that that guy's views are the average Republican views. Oh, I'm sorry. When I first saw that, and I've got another one coming up for you in the second hour of the program that we'll bring along. Evidently, the congressman's not going to call. It's fascinating to me. How could you be so freaking ignorant as to be on TV and make a statement like that guy just did? And you know there's a whole floor full of them right there in front of your eyes and at the Republican convention when that guy's doing interviews that he could just go through them, pick and choose, and he's going to get pretty much the same answers from everyone. Yeah, I'm a Republican, and let's go kick Iran's ass, yeah. Oh, but I tell you, you just throw a bunch of bananas in there and let them go for it. I thought I'd put that on to cheer you up a little bit. And folks, that was no ruse. That was an honest-to-God delegate at the Republican National Convention in Minneapolis, St. Paul. Wonder what the average IQ was in that room. Whew. Woo. Oh, my God. I see things aren't going too good on Wall Street right now. It's down 421 points. Oh, oh, oh. Oh, my. Well, it's been one of those weeks. It has certainly been one of those weeks. Oh, my God. 420 points. Wow. Well, I guess a lot of folks on Wall Street didn't think that the bailout for AIG was the greatest thing in the world, huh? Evidently not. Well, I hope something positive comes from it. It's done. Wow. 420 points. They've got about a minute and 20 seconds until they ring the bell. So it could fall even further. People are selling off big time at the end of the day today. What a shame. Think how many people's pensions and all that are gone down the drain this week. Ugly, ugly, ugly situation. And folks, it's happened because of greed and corruption and deregulation of the financial institutions. And I think you know who's behind all of that. I should not have to remind anybody who's behind most of that. Well, we're going to pause for news at the top of the hour. You listen to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. And we'll be back right after the news. 445 points down.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. As if the U.S. job market didn't have enough to worry about. It was hit with another shockwave on Monday when Hewlett-Packard announced plans to slash 25,000 jobs worldwide, with nearly half of those jobs coming from the United States. The cuts will come over the next 3 years and reduce 8% of the company's global workforce. The company said it isn't all bad news, as they hope to replace half of the cut positions with new jobs in different departments. HP is absorbing operations of recently acquired company Electronic Data Systems. Combined, the two companies have 320,000 employees, and most of the cuts are expected to come from human resources, finance, and the legal department. An unfair labor practice lawsuit has been filed against the temporary management of the Tropicana Hotel Casino in Atlantic City. The United Auto Workers filed a complaint with the National Labor Relations Board, alleging that management is not bargaining in good faith, even though 80% of the workers voted for union representation. Al Wellink, a member of the UAW bargaining team, said in a statement that such an overwhelming vote for representation is a strong mandate for a strong contract. After the previous Tropicana management lost its operating license, former New Jersey Supreme Court Justice Gary Stein was appointed as a conservator by the Casino Control Commission. The union says Stein does not wish to reach an agreement because he is concerned it will tie the hands of any future owner. However, the hotel released a statement Monday night that says Justice Stein instructed the bargaining team to negotiate in good faith to reach a complete contract between Tropicana and the UAW. Should espionage jobs be outsourced? That's a question being raised now that new government figures have been released showing that the Central Intelligence Agency and other U.S. spy agencies employ roughly 36,000 contractors. The figures show that 27% of the contractors handle clandestine information collection operations in regions such as the Middle East. Since 9/11, the need for workers with expertise in that area has ballooned. Another 22% manage and monitor computer networks, while 19% assist in information analysis. On Monday, Democratic presidential candidate Barack Obama made his support of the 27,000 striking Boeing workers known when he spoke via satellite to members of the International Association of Machinists gathered in Florida for their national convention. The IAM represents the workers who are on the picket lines for a second week in Oregon, Kansas, and Washington State. Obama told the machinists, "Even though I can't be with them or you today, I stand with you."
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Thanks for lending an ear.
Throw the second switch! Throw the third switch!
Not the third switch!
Throw it, I say! Throw it!
The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, you hear me? Give my creation! Fly!
This was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. Can we get progress?
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Oh, hello, everybody. We are back after the news. Just looking at the shocking news on Wall Street today. HP losing how many jobs? Huge hit on jobs. Isn't that where Carly Fiorina, the spokesman for McCain, rose from secretary to CEO, and she got fired. And by the way, she got accused by Debbie Wasserman Schultz of not being a very good executive while she was saying that that Palin and McCain and Obama and Biden, none of them were capable of being CEOs like she was. And then Debbie Wasserman Schultz popped up and reminded her that, hey, you got fired from being the CEO at that job. And, of course, the woman, she wanted to claim it as some sort of an inside job sexism. She didn't say it on this particular issue, but I've seen her on this particular episode. But I've seen her talk about it before, how she was railroaded out of HP. But she walked off with $40-some million, $21 million in a pension plan or stock, and $21 million in cash. So naturally, she's working. naturally, she's working for the McCain campaign. But she tried to pull that on Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Of course, that ain't going to fly with her. Man, she's a spunky gal, isn't she? I love it when she gets going. She can shut down just about anybody when she gets up against them. And often, who was she up against yesterday on TV that I saw? What's her name? Bachman, maybe, from Minnesota. Doesn't have the sense she was born with. And she just, as Debbie Wasserman Schultz was giving it to her, she was sitting there going, whoa. I mean, she had the typical Republican. Oh, my God. When you look at the intellect of a Debbie Wasserman Schultz up against, I think that woman's name is Bachman from Minnesota, the one that's always got her hands all over Bush every time he walks, she's in a meeting or any place where he's at, she's always grabbing him and all that. They've made a lot of fun of her over that. Oh, man. 449 points down today, the Dow, 449. Let me take a quick look here and see where commodities are. Oil currently at $97.16, up $6.59 a barrel today. And I'm looking here for gold to see what gold did. Gold went up $70. $70 gold went up to $850 gold went up to. Holy cow. Remarkable. Remarkable. That'd have been a good day to have a pallet of gold sitting in your basement, wouldn't it? Wow. I hadn't watched gold all day long, had no idea. Now I'm seeing that the Dow is down. Oh, things are, the market, they must be having trouble. It's going crazy. Anyway, 449 down today. A bad, bad, bad day. Another historic day on Wall Street. But John, don't worry. John McCain, he's going to get us out of that. And he's been a hero for regulation all these years. You know, this was then, back in early 1995, after Republicans had taken control of Congress, John McCain promoted a moratorium on federal regulations of all kinds. He was quoted, and let me quote him here. He said that excessive regulations were destroying the American family, the American dream, and voters want these regulations stopped. Well, his little moratorium effort was unsuccessful. And what did he say? That was in early 1995. Well, what did he say in March of this year? He said, "I'm always for less regulation," he told the Wall Street Journal last March, "but I'm aware of the view that there is a need for government oversight. And situations like the subprime lending crisis, the problem that has cascaded through Wall Street this year," he concluded, "but I am fundamentally a deregulator." John, I think you're what you need to be on that particular day, depending on which question has been asked of you. You and your cohort there, the Palin-McCain ticket. So, that was in early 1995, and then that was March of this year. So, 6 months later, this is now. Republican president in Reuters, Republican presidential candidate John McCain said on Monday that the crisis sweeping Lehman Brothers and other financial firms was a sign that regulations governing the industry needed to be revamped. McCain also said he was pleased that the Federal Reserve and the Treasury Department did not step in to rescue U.S. investment bank Lehman, which filed for bankruptcy protection as concerns grew about the fate of other financial firms. And John McCain said, that was a Freudian slip, I said McCain. Really it was, I swear to you. Let me quote what he said. "The McCain-Palin administration will replace the outdated and ineffective patchwork quilt of regulatory oversight in Washington and bring transparency and accountability to Wall Street," McCain said in a statement. Sarah Palin is McCain's running mate. Well, I guess we knew that. Reuters didn't have to tell us that. Lehman's bankruptcy, he said, is the latest reminder of ineffective regulation and management. Well, now it's not regulation that he's against. It's ineffective regulation and management. But from 1995, till last March, here's a guy that was the champion of deregulation. Now he's suddenly the champ of greater regulation. And so you might wonder, how did he ever carry the claim of being a reformer all that time when he fought against business oversight? I mean, this isn't the first time John McCain has been injured by this anti-regulation crusade. Not at all. Charlie Keating always took care of his friends, especially those in politics, and John McCain was no exception. And we've spoken about this before, but let's give you a few details about it that John just doesn't like to be reminded of. In 1982, during McCain's first run for the House, Keating held a fundraiser for him, collecting more than $11,000 from 40 employees of American Continental Corporation. McCain would spend more than $550,000 to win the primary and then the general election. And in 1983, McCain contemplated his House reelection. Keating hosted a $1,000 a plate dinner. Remember, this is 25 years ago. $1,000 a plate dinner for him 25 years ago, even though McCain had no serious competition. And when McCain pushed for the Senate in 1986, Keating was there with more than $50,000. So by 1987, McCain had received about $112,000 in political contributions from Keating and his associates. This has to do with this amnesia I keep speaking about the Republicans. McCain had also carried a little water for Keating in Washington. While in the House of Representatives, McCain, along with a majority of representatives, co-sponsored a resolution to delay new regulations designed to curb risky investments by thrifts such as Lincoln. And here we are, folks. Here we are. 21 years later, from when John McCain co-sponsored a resolution to delay new regulations designed to curb risky investments by thrifts such as Lincoln. His very first scandal was the Keating Five centerpiece of the SNL crisis that threw us into a recession 21 years ago. And what did John McCain have to say about his shady performances back then? Well, the usual, I guess you would call it. Keating was no ordinary constituent to McCain. On October 8, 1989, and remember, we're talking about a man here. We're talking about a man here that wants to be the President of the United States and hopefully restore some dignity to the White House. But on October 8, 1989, the Arizona Republic, which is the paper in the valley there in Phoenix, revealed that McCain's wife and her father had invested $359,100 in a Keating shopping center in April of 96, the year before McCain met with the regulators. The paper also reported that the McCains, sometimes accompanied by their daughter and babysitter, had made at least 9 trips at Keating's expense, sometimes aboard the American Continental Jet. 3 of the trips were made during vacations to Keating's opulent Bahamas retreat at Cat Cay. McCain also did not pay Keating for some of the trips until years later, after they were taken, after he learned that Keating was in trouble over Lincoln Savings and Loan. And when the story broke, McCain did nothing to help himself. McCain said to the Arizona Republic reporter, "You're a liar." When the Arizona Republic reporter asked him about the business relationship between his wife and Keating, he said, "You're a liar. That's the spouse's involvement, you idiot," McCain said later in the same conversation. "Do you understand English, don't you?" He also belittled reporters when they asked about his wife's ties to Keating. He said, "It's up to you to find that out, kids." The paper ran the story. And in his 2002 book, McCain confesses to ridiculously immature behavior during that particular interview, and adds that the Republic reporter's persistence in questioning me about the matter provoked me to rage. Seems there's a lot that provokes him to rage. He said, "I don't know how the Republic journalist would have reported the story had I been more civil and understanding, or just more of a professional during the interview," he wrote in his book. And at a news conference after the story ran, McCain was a changed man. He stood calmly for 90 minutes and answered every question. On the shopping center, his defense was simple. The deal did not involve him. The shares in the shopping center had been bought by a partnership set up between McCain's wife and her father. Well, well, well. It just so happened, and I guess it's one of those coinkydinks, huh, that his wife happened to be in bed financially with Charles Keating, a man who had that McCain had gone to bat for in the United States Congress to try and get some deregulation, get a moratorium on regulation of his financial institution. Just a coincidence. And McCain also had to explain his trips with Keating and why he didn't pay Keating back right away. And on that score, McCain admitted he'd fouled up. Fouled up. Gosh, that didn't work for Jack Abramoff, did it? Fouled up. That didn't work for Duke Cunningham either, did it? Fouled up. Jim Traficant, fouled up. No, that didn't work for any of those guys. When their hands were caught in the cookie jar, they were hauled off to prison. And we could name some others as well, both Republicans and Democrats. Well, I guess I did mention a Democrat with Traficante. But fouled up. He said he should have reimbursed Keating immediately, not waiting several years. Well, well, well. And his staff said here's a word you hear so much coming out of these politicians' mouths after they've been caught. You can always bet you're going to hear this word. It was an oversight. It was an oversight. But it looked bad. McCain jetting around with Keating, then going to bat for him with the federal regulators. He said, I was in a hell of a mess. And so we turn to someone I'm not unfamiliar with. One of his fellow senators caught in that deal. And here's what McCain wrote in a summation of his own performance. McCain wrote in his memoir, and this is the senator I was familiar with, Senator Dennis DeConcini. From the center of the aisle, he praised the decision to keep McCain on the hook. It became clear to me, and it was later confirmed by Ethics Committee members, that Bennett was attempting to dismiss the charges against McCain. And in order to appear nonpartisan, he included Glenn in this effort. That's John Glenn of Ohio. DeConcini wrote with co-author Jack August, thanks to the three Democrats on the committee, and perhaps with the help of Senator Jesse Helms, however, the charges remained in place for all the senators under investigation, so all of us had to attend the 23-day public hearing, which was indeed a trial, before the six-member Senate Ethics Committee. And in the book, DeConcini reiterates his allegation that McCain leaked to the media sensitive information about certain closed proceedings in order to hurt DeConcini, Regal, and Cranston. That's Alan Cranston we're talking about. It's a fairly serious charge. The Boston Globe revisited the Keating 5 leaks in 2000, and the story paraphrased a congressional investigator, Clark B. Hall, as personally concluding that McCain was one of the principal leakers. The newspaper also reported that McCain, under oath, had denied involvement with the leaks. And so McCain owns up to his mistake this way. He says, I was judged eventually after 3 years of using, quote, poor judgment, and I agree with that assessment. Now, isn't that a dandy? Yeah, it was bad. I was caught, and I agree that I was bad and I was caught. 21 years after admitting to his poor judgment, working against regulatory oversight of corrupt businesses, after leaking hearing results to the press and lying under oath about it, John McCain has reformed himself once again. He's reinvented himself once again. He's as good as Cher at doing that, right? Or Madonna. You don't know which McCain you're going to get. Depends on what day. You know, with the stock market in full meltdown mode, after Monday and today, and the Federal Reserve announces the biggest bailout in U.S. financial history, suddenly a light bulb, it goes on in St. Johnny McCain's suddenly wise old head. He says, trust me. That's his new mantra. He's all of a sudden the super regulator. He's come in to save everybody. The Palin-McCain administration will replace the outdated and ineffective patchwork quilt of regulatory oversight in Washington and bring transparency and accountability to Washington, he says, to Wall Street, without having his face turn red. The question is, can you trust John McCain? I asked the question on the chat room. What do McCain and Palin mean by reforming Washington? I'll tell you what I think they mean. I think what they truly mean is, get me elected. I'm saying this because maybe it'll get me elected. neither of them have shown any inclination whatsoever to do any serious reforming. We've got Sarah Palin, who claims she went to the governorship in Alaska and got rid of the Good Old Boys Network, and instead she started her own Good Old Boys and Girls Network. Who is she kidding over that? Here we have a not altogether unimportant issue with this Troopergate thing going on up there, and evidently she's done a good job of watching how Bush has handled everything. If anybody asks you any questions, first of all, tell any investigating body that you're going to cooperate fully and happily, and I'll cooperate with anything you want to. And then when push comes to shove, you tell them to go to hell. And you don't, the people that are supposed to come testify and all, they don't honor the subpoenas. Have been subpoenaed? They've been watching Bush all right. Ah, yes. They've watched Bush very, very, very well. Let's face it. She is learning well. She's watched the Bush administration stonewall and ignore subpoenas during the past few years, and she's figured out how to keep herself out of trouble just by watching. She is a fast learner. What was it, a week ago Friday, or was it a week ago tomorrow, the Alaskan State Judiciary Committee? Republican body, by the way. They voted to issue subpoenas in the investigation into Governor Sarah Palin. But those state employees who were ordered to testify, they won't be honoring the subpoenas. And who's telling us that? The Alaskan Attorney General. He sends a letter to State Senator Hollis French, Democrat, who's overseeing the investigation. That Attorney General Talis Kohlberg requested the subpoenas be withdrawn and spoke for the employees, stating their refusal to testify unless compelled by the full state senate or the entire legislature. Kohlberg, who was appointed by Palin, said the employees are caught between their respect for the legislature and their loyalty to the governor, who, by the way, initially agreed to cooperate with an inquiry, but has now opposed it since McCain chose her as his running mate. And all of this is over surrounding the investigation into Palin's firing of former Public Safety Commissioner Walt Monaghan, known as Troopergate, and it's markedly increased since Palin was named the Republican vice presidential nominee. But when the investigation began just a couple of months ago, Palin said that she was going to give her full cooperation. Yeah. Isn't that the way it usually goes? Full cooperation. Hey, I promise you I had another one of these Republican morons to tell you about here, to let him tell you about himself. It's a little bit lengthy, but hey, you can never get enough of this good stuff. Another delegate from Oklahoma. You could guess this guy's from Oklahoma, but I think it's real cute that he got one from Oklahoma. So another Republican delegate being interviewed on the floor of the Republican National Convention. Enjoy.
Hi, I'm John Hamilton. Above the floor of the Republican National Convention, all week long, Link TV is bringing you special coverage as we look at what change looks like this 2008 election season. Well, yesterday I had a chance to speak with a delegate from the state of Oklahoma. We discussed the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, nuclear weapons, depleted uranium, and climate change. Here's what he had to say. I overheard you on the escalator coming up mentioning that Oklahoma has one of the highest volunteer rates in the United States Armed Forces. Why do you think so many Oklahomans are interested in going into the Armed Forces?
Well, because we're very patriotic, and I do believe that these soldiers get their patriotism from the population at whole. They love America. They want to do something. They want to do service for America. And our state is really the reddest of red states. states. They will, they voted, every county in our whole state voted for George Bush the last time. Us in Utah, I think, were the, one of the two, I think it was two or three states that, that the whole state voted for, every county voted for it. But I really believe our soldiers are some of the bravest, best soldiers there ever was, and they're very patriotic from Oklahoma, very patriotic.
Well, we've seen since 2001, we've seen the United States deployed in Afghanistan for 7 years now, in Iraq for 5 years. Do you see either of these wars ending anytime soon?
I think that the very worst thing we can do is pull out prematurely. Now, I'm not for 100 years, and I'm not for us staying in that country for a very, very long time. But I really believe that we should stay until there is a ability to take care of all the, or most of their problems in Iraq. And when they ask us to leave, let's leave.
Well, I've just come from Denver from the Democratic National Convention. Many Democrats said that George W. Bush misled the country into war, possibly even lied about weapons of mass destruction. How do you respond to that charge?
Well, my opinion, when we went to war in Iraq, we told China, keep your hands off of Taiwan, because China has always said Taiwan is theirs. We told Japan, do not go nuclear, because it would make China go really, really work China up, because Japan has went to and beat the tar out of Japan. Japan has beat the tar out of China two or three times back in the past history. And I'm telling you, those are two of the things. We also made an example saying that we will do things that, if we believe in it. Now, I'm not for staying there, and I really was not wild about us being there. But I think as a country, we have got to show the world that we are a peaceful, but we're going to have to, we're a peaceful country, and we want, we want peace, but we will back it up with military might.
Well, certainly Senator McCain is a tough character, former veteran, and you mentioned the word nuclear, and he has in the past suggested that the United States could consider building what he calls low-yield nuclear weapons. How do you feel about that? Using tactical nuclear weapons?
You're talking about tactical? No, I'm not for tactical nuclear weapons. I am not for that. I understand that that they are very powerful. They kill people. They don't destroy everything else. What tactical? I think that's the neutron bomb. What we'd call that probably. I'm really for I'm not for using nuclear unless it's a very, very, very dire thing that happened to us, really.
Well, what about the use of depleted uranium in the munitions in places like Iraq and Afghanistan?
No problem. The depleted uranium has no radioactive value, nothing radioactive. It is totally inert, and it is just heavy. And we need it. We need depleted uranium for armor-piercing bullets, for things that will, that we need that high weight bullet, whatever it is. Depleted uranium has nothing to do with nuclear. It's depleted uranium.
Well, what do you say to the many Iraqis in the south of the country who are reporting birth defects, as well as the GIs who are coming back and saying their health is being jeopardized by this?
Depleted uranium was made in next to my mother's house, about a quarter mile from her house, and they have had no ill effects. There is no uranium in this place. The depleted uranium was processed. There is no residual uranium from that process at that place in Oklahoma that was done. They can say that all they want to, but if you take a Geiger counter and put it around depleted uranium, you will get nothing but background radiation.
Right. Switching gears a little bit, one of your senators from Oklahoma, James Inhofe, he's been an outspoken critic of global warming science, and he said that global warming is one of the greatest hoaxes perpetrated on mankind. Do you share that view?
I don't know what hoax. What I want to do is I do not want to change. I don't know enough to tell you if we're having global warming or not global warming, but I do not want to change the way America sees the world because of global warming. I don't want to sit there and the Kyoto Treaty, I do not want to sign it, did not want to sign it then. All it does is I want America to be first and I want it to be the best.
Thank you for watching this Link TV special, What Change Looks Like. See the full schedule at linktv.org/change.
Imagine now, that guy right there. That guy right there. A delegate to the Republican National Convention from Oklahoma. And no residual effects from radiation, from depleted uranium, and what was he said? Background what I'd like to know is how that guy ever found his way to Minneapolis, Minnesota. Now, if that guy isn't dumber than the proverbial hoe handle, I don't know who is.
Well, I don't know, from Oklahoma. Geez.
Oh, man. I didn't know this was coming. This has made my day right here. I just got an email. I got an email from Sophie. And, I just got to talk about this. So thanks for sending this. This brightened my day like you can't believe. You know, the audio we played to start off the program today about another stupid, ignorant Republican delegate that was for more war. Remember that earlier in the show? Yeah, I want more war. Less taxes and more war. That's what I want. And his name was Gabriel Schwartz. And I am sent by Sophie this article out of the newspaper that I just feel compelled to let you know about. And I don't know if I'm going to be able to read this with a straight face or not. I don't think so. Anyway, the story's by Molly Priestmeyer, a Denver news channel. I'd heard this story. I just didn't know who it was. I didn't know this was one and the same as the guy who we just played the audio or earlier in the program. A Denver news channel is reporting this morning that a Colorado delegate, 29-year-old attorney Gabriel Nathan Schwartz, that guy was an attorney, was robbed during the RNC after bringing a woman back to his room at Hotel Ivy. He reportedly took the woman to his swank Minneapolis hotel room, where she made him drinks and told him to get undressed. It was around 4 a.m., and the delegate told police disrobing was the last thing he remembered. The alleged woman snatched a $30,000 watch, a $20,000 ring, and a necklace valued at $5,000, earrings priced at $4,000, and a Prada belt valued at $1,000, Minneapolis police told the station. Before bringing the woman back to his room the early morning of September 4th, Schwartz talked about his vision for change with Link TV. He's a McCain supporter because he wants less taxes, more war, and to bomb Iran, baby. What would a war with Iran look like? Massive bombings from the sky, he said, and then we'd go in, plant a flag, and take the oil and the money. Charming. Can you say payback is a bitch? I did not know that was the same guy, I swear to you. Didn't know that. Incredible. Absolutely incredible. $30,000 watch, $20,000 ring, a necklace at five. And I had read about this story earlier. I just didn't put two and two together. It was the same guy. But it said alleged woman. I heard that the guy, the woman was not a woman, is what I'd heard. The Denver police said, figured out it wasn't really a woman, but a transgender or something. I don't know, really. So there you have it. That does make my day. I am terribly pleased to tell you that whole story. Well, let's go to a commercial here, and we'll be back in just a couple minutes.
I'm John Hamilton on the floor of the Republican National Convention. All week long, we're bringing you special programming as we examine what change looks like in the 2008.
Well, that's the wrong one. Let's do the right one.
We're voting Republican because we don't like shopping at small neighborhood stores.
We don't want the problem of choosing where to shop.
And we just love cheap plastic crap from China.
I'm voting Republican because I don't really want a cure for AIDS or breast cancer. I just gaze at women.
I'm voting Republican because I think new drugs should be made available immediately, whether they've been tested properly or not. If the major pharmaceutical companies' bottom lines are healthy, then I feel healthy too.
Bye-bye, baby. Have a good day. I'm voting Republican so that my little Caitlin can be in the classroom with at least 30 other children. That way, she can be challenged by fighting for attention.
I'm voting Republican because women just can't be trusted to make decisions about their own bodies. Never, ever, ever.
I'm voting Republican because I've already seen the great outdoors. Continuing our use of fossil fuels freely is far more important than preserving our natural wildlands.
We're voting Republican because we like a conservative majority on the Supreme Court.
We really like knowing that even if we're separate, we'll still be called equal.
I'm voting Republican because I need to be told who I can love.
I told you.
Honey, I need the government to tell me.
I just need them to tell me how I can best show a lifetime commitment.
And Republicans are just the folks to do that, sweetheart.
I'm voting Republican because corporations should not have to pay to clean up environmental damage. The EPA is an outmoded idea. If people want clean water, buy it in a bottle.
I'm voting Republican because I don't want to know if the food I'm eating has been genetically modified or exposed to radiation. I don't want to have to live with that fear, you know? So, if the label says it's food, that's good enough for me.
I'm voting Republican because
I really enjoy being screwed by the utility companies.
We need more minorities in prison.
Because hybrid cars really suck.
I just don't feel I deserve health insurance.
Because Texas needs more billionaires.
I'm voting Republican because sometimes the Constitution is just one big inconvenient headache.
I think the whole world should be run by one big corporation. I think it'd be so much cozier.
Because all other countries are inferior to us.
And we should start as many wars as we need to keep it that way.
So I can stay in Iraq.
So I can go to Iran.
So if you were thinking about voting something besides Republican, don't bother. Stay home. We've got it all taken care of. You'll get exactly what you deserve.
This.
It used to seem to me that my life ran on too fast, and I had to take it slowly just to make the good parts last. When you're born to run, it's so hard to just slow down. So don't be surprised to see me in the brighter part of town. And I'll be back in the high life again. All the doors I closed one time will open up again. I'll be back in the high life again. All the eyes that watched me once will smile and take me in. And I'll drink and dance with one hand free. Let the world back into me. Oh, I'll be a sight to see. Back in the high again. inferior to me. And I hope that you're still out there, you're like you used to be. Have ourselves a time, we'll dance till the morning sun. But let the good times come, we won't stop until we're done. And we're back in the high life again. All the doors are closed one time, we'll open up again. We'll be back in the high life again. All the eyes that watched us once will smile and take us in. And we'll drink and dance with one hand free, have the world so easily. Oh, we'll be a sight to see, back in the high. We'll be back in the high life again. All the doors that closed one time will open up again. We'll be back in the high life again. All the eyes that watched us once will smile and take us in. Back in the high life.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Thanks for joining us today. We got, about 13 minutes left in the program. Got something from Rick that I want to pass on to you. And, Rick, I want to thank you for sending this. And maybe some of you have seen this, maybe not. It's something that's been around evidently on the Internet. But I think it's good for everybody to hear this, maybe even hear it again, to give you an understanding of what's going on with the Palin-McCain campaign and what kind of fairness and honesty that comes from that campaign. It's called This Is Your Nation on White Privilege by Tim Wise. For those who still can't grasp the concept of white privilege, or who are looking for some easy-to-understand examples of it, perhaps this list will help. White privilege is when you can get pregnant at 17 like Bristol Palin, and everyone is quick to insist that your life and that of your family is a personal matter, and that no one has a right to judge you or your parents because every family has challenges, even as black and Latino families with similar challenges are regularly typified as irresponsible, pathological, and arbiters of social decay. White privilege is when you can call yourself a frickin' redneck, like Bristol Palin's boyfriend does, and talk about how if anyone messes with you, you'll kick their frickin' ass, and talk about how you like to shoot shit for fun, and still be viewed as a responsible all-American boy, and a great son-in-law, rather than a thug. White privilege is when you can attend 4 different colleges in 6 years, like Sarah Palin did, one of which you basically failed out of, then returning to after making up some coursework at a community college. And no one questions your intelligence or commitment to achievement, whereas a person of color who did this would be viewed as unfit for college and probably someone who only got in the first place because of affirmative action. White privilege is when you can claim that being mayor of a town smaller than most medium-sized colleges and then governor of a state with about the same number of people as the lower fifth of the island of Manhattan makes you ready to potentially be president, and people don't all piss on themselves with laughter, while being a black U.S. senator, 2-term state senator, and constitutional law scholar means you're untested. White privilege is being able to say that you support the words under God in the Pledge of Allegiance because if it was good enough for the Founding Fathers, it's good enough for me, and not be immediately disqualified for holding office since, after all, the pledge was written in the late 1800s, and the under God part wasn't added until the 1950s, while believing that reading accused criminals and terrorists their rights, because you know the Constitution, which you used to teach at a prestigious law school, requires it, is a dangerous and silly idea only supported by mushy liberals. White privilege is being able to be a gun enthusiast and not make people immediately scared of you. White privilege is being able to have a husband who is a member of an extremist political party that wants your state to secede from the Union, and whose motto is Alaska First. And no one questions your patriotism or that of your family. While if you're black, and your spouse merely fails to come to a 9/11 memorial so that she can be home with her kids on the first day of school, people immediately think she's being disrespectful. White privilege is being able to make fun of community organizers and the work they do, like, among other things, fight for the right of women to vote, or for civil rights, or the 8-hour workday, or the end to child labor. And people think you're being pithy and tough. But if you're merely question the experience of a small-town mayor and 18-month governor with no foreign policy expertise beyond the class she took in college, and the fact that she lives close to Russia, you're somehow being mean, or even sexist. White privilege is being able to convince white women, who don't even agree with you on any substantive issue, to vote for you and your running mate anyway, because suddenly your presence on the ticket has inspired confidence in these same white women and make them give your party a second look. White privilege is being able to fire people who didn't support your political campaigns and not be accused of abusing your power or being a typical politician who engages in favoritism. While being black and merely knowing some folks from the old line political machines in Chicago means you must be corrupt. White privilege is when you can take nearly 24 hours to get to a hospital after beginning to leak amniotic fluid and still be viewed as a great mom whose commitment to her children is unquestionable and whose next-door neighbor qualities make her ready to be vice president, while if you're a black candidate for president and you let your children be interviewed for a few seconds on TV, you're irresponsibly exploiting them. White privilege is being able to give a 36-minute speech in which you talk about lipstick and make fun of your appointment, while laying out no substantive policy positions on any issue at all, and still manage to be considered a legitimate candidate, while a black person who gives an hour speech the week before, in which he lays out specific policy proposals on several issues, is still criticized for being too vague about what he would do if elected. White privilege is being able to attend churches over the years whose pastors say that people who voted for John Kerry or merely criticized George W. Bush are going to hell, and that the U.S. is an explicitly Christian nation, and the job of Christians is to bring Christian theological principles into government, and who bring in speakers who say the conflict in the Middle East is God's punishment on Jews for rejecting Jesus, and everyone can still think you're a good church-going Christian. But if you're black, and friends with a black pastor, who has noted, as have Colin Powell and the U.S. Department of Defense, that terrorist attacks are often result of U.S. foreign policy, and who talks about the history of racism and its effect on black people, you're an extremist who probably hates America. White privilege is not knowing what the Bush Doctrine is when asked by a reporter, and then people get angry at the reporter for asking you such a trick question, while being black and merely refusing to give a one-word answer to the queries of Bill O'Reilly means you're dodging the question or even trying to seem overly intellectual and nuanced. White privilege is being able to go to a prestigious prep school, then to Yale and then to Harvard Business School, and yet still be seen as just an average guy, George W. Bush. While being black, going to a prestigious prep school, and then Occidental College, then Columbia, and then the Harvard Law School makes you uppity, and a snob who probably looks down on regular folks. White privilege is being able to graduate near the bottom of your college class, or graduate with a C average from Yale, and that's okay, and you're cut out to be president. But if you're black and you graduate near the top of your class from Harvard Law, you can't be trusted to make good decisions in office. White privilege is being able to dump your first wife after she's disfigured in a car crash, so you can take up with a multimillionaire beauty queen who you go on to call the C-word in public, and still be thought of as a man of strong family values, while if you're black and married for nearly 20 years to the same woman, your family is viewed as un-American and your gestures of affection for each other are called terrorist fist bumps. White privilege is being able to sing a song about bombing Iran, and still be viewed as a sober and rational statesman, with the maturity to be president while being black and suggesting that the U.S. should speak with other nations, even when we have disagreements with them, makes you dangerously naive and immature. White privilege is being able to claim your experience as a POW has anything at all to do with your fitness for president while being black and experiencing racism and an absent father is apparently among the lesser adversities faced by other politicians, as Sarah Palin explained in her convention speech. And finally, white privilege is the only thing that could possibly allow someone to become president when he's voted with George W. Bush 90% of the time, even as unemployment is skyrocketing, people are losing their homes, inflation is rising, and the U.S. is increasingly isolated from world opinion, just because white voters aren't sure about that whole change thing. You know, it's just too vague and ill-defined, unlike, say, 4 more years the same, which is very concrete and certain. White privilege is, in short, the problem. Thanks for sending that. I appreciate it very much. This about says it all concerning this particular time in history, this event that we're experiencing right now with this election. I've enjoyed this show today. Had a lot of interesting news and a lot of interesting things to talk about, and I hope you've enjoyed it as well. Stay tuned, of course, for Mark Levine. He's going to be on presently, and Mark, as always, will have a great show for you to listen to tonight and followed up by Bob after that. So you got a great evening coming up, and just stay close to your old pewter. And the Head On Radio Network will entertain you and inform you and help keep you sane in these days. Once again, Wall Street down 449 points today. Oil up $6 a barrel. And gold up $70 an ounce. So people will be out selling gold again next week. It was up to what? 1,043 went all the way down to 735 or 40, and now back up to 850. That is not a good sign when gold starts going like that all of a sudden. That shows a little bit of panic going up $70 an ounce in one day. And there is some panic out there. There is concern. There are a lot of people all over this country feeling the effects of what's going on in Wall Street. People that have their pension funds at risk, their 401ks. It is something we all should worry about, I guess, if we should worry. I know folks who think we don't. Anyway, I do want to thank you for that. And, what are we at here? Got about a minute to go, I guess. Anyway, thanks for listening. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. I've enjoyed being with you today. Hope you'll be back with us tomorrow. We'll have another good show for you. Stay tuned for Mark Levine and then Bob Kincaid the whole evening here at Head On Radio Network. Don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Have a good one, gang.